We're going to come together. Welcome. If everybody can get settled. Okay. I'm back after a long absence, and thank you, Steve Murray and Steve Gaines, for filling in, and also John Ugaritz and John Carlin. I know they had to do more work than they would have if I would have been here, but thank you. We have a couple big items on the agenda today. One is the regional goals and objectives. A lot of work has been done, and now those are being brought to the SAT for review and input. The other big item is the MPA evaluation plans, and there are a handful of other things on the agenda. One is the revised SAT guidelines. We'd like to get those approved today if we can. And we're going to be asked for input on the regional profiles, and then we'll get an update on the Central Coast Project from Mark Carr and Dean Wendt. And then we should have time for public comment at the end. We'll try to adjourn at 4:30 if we can. Because we'd like to spend as much time as possible on the evaluation issues, I'd like to ask the other people on the agenda to maybe cut their allotted time in about half, if you can do that. And I've talked to several of you, and it seems to be a feeling that that's possible. If you need the time, take it. But if you can yield time to evaluation, that's appreciated. I can remember when Astrid was whining because the socioeconomic part of the project wasn't getting sufficient attention. And look what's happened. You give them an inch and it'll take a mile. I know. So anyway, that's it. Before we begin, any comments? So I'll turn it over to John Ugaritz and John Carlin to give us an update.
Do you have any opening remarks, John?
Welcome. We have a reduced group today, but some important work. And I think I look forward to working through the agenda with you.
And I echo that this is an important meeting. Actually, Astrid and Steve, maybe at the first break or if you want before then, if you guys want to move up to these two seats, because I can't see Steve at all, and I don't like that. It scares me when I can't see what he's doing over there. Yeah, he's behind a wall for me, and Astrid is too. So if you guys want or can, it'd be good if you move up at some point today when you feel like you got the time. We do have a lot to do today. We're not going to review any draft presentations, and we had hoped to have the latest three presentations, the ones we saw at your last meeting, to be presented to the Central Coast Stakeholder Group on the 7th, but based on the response I've gotten and people's availability, it looks like that's not going to happen. So we're going to give those three presentations to the Blue Ribbon Task Force at their late September meeting, and then we'll have to figure out when we can provide them to the Central Coast Group, or if we want to do that via video or some other method. So we'll discuss that offline today. A couple big things have happened this last month, and very importantly, the master plan framework was adopted by the Fish and Game Commission unanimously on the 18th. They have noted that it's important that the document be flexible and changeable, and we do intend to review the results of this Central Coast process and make changes to the document based on that. And we have promised them that when we bring a recommendation for the Central Coast process to them, we will bring the framework back as well with some suggested edits and changes. So it's not a done deal completely, but importantly, they did agree to include your guidance in the document as a whole. And that helps guide the process, which is important. Also importantly, We did get some additional information into your guidance regarding the literature behind it, that it's not just your personal viewpoints, but that there is peer-reviewed studies that help make that guidance, and so that's in there. We do need to continue talking, however, about overall peer review of this process as we move forward. John Curlin and I have been working on that, and there needs to be some continued discussion, primarily because we're having a difficult time figuring out who will do and organize and coordinate the peer review. And so we may have some offline discussions with some of you about potential options for that, if you have ideas about groups who can do peer review who we haven't tapped into yet. That would be important. And so with that, I think unless anybody had any questions about what's gone over the last month, we'd like to jump right into things and start looking at the significantly revised guidelines document, and maybe have Steve Murray head up that discussion since he was the lead on it. And he can talk from behind his post over there.
Folks, so at the last meeting, I volunteered to take a look along with Heather at the guidelines document and to incorporate some of the comments that were offered verbally at the meeting, as well as in writing that were sent prior to and after the last meeting. And in doing that, we looked at trying to do a couple of things with the document. First, we tried to make the document generic with respect to the relationship between the SAT and the regional working groups, because the prior version had simply addressed the Central Coast working group, and we thought that if we're going to write this document and establish guidelines, that the guidelines ought to hold not only for the Central Coast working group, but for any working group, because I think that's the way we view the interaction going forward. So language was altered to make that generic with regard to regional working groups. Also, we looked at moving around some of the text pieces, because in reading the document carefully, it appeared to me that certain items that appeared later in the document might best be coupled together with similar discussions that appeared earlier, and vice versa. So this document has now been revised, and we use the term extensively revised not because we said and added a whole lot of new conceptual ideas or pieces, but that if you were to compare this document with the previous version, look at the track changes, you would have a document littered with track changes because of the movements that took place. We've had very little comment back on the guidelines. Heather, you might give a quick comment about what you've had back from folks on this.
Yeah, we had very few comments. There was most of the things were adding a sentence or two. I know there was one specific sentence that was added about people at the CCRSG meetings or any RSG meeting being able to ask questions directly of the SET representatives present at those meetings. And if it's sort of a simple, straightforward question, they could speak directly and didn't have to go through the official process of submitting a question. This last round, that was the only major change that I had, I think.
So one of the other items that other revisions that were made to the guidelines document apparently evolved or were evolving at our last meeting, and they reflected on some of the kinds of interactions with the regional working group that was being codified, I believe, by Mike Weber. Am I correct on that? So the language that now is in this document is essentially consistent with the language that Mike had put together on that issue. And that's a little different than what it was in the original document. Of substance, I think that there are three comments that need to be brought out onto the table, and these were offered by Doyle. And I think that they transcend some of what is captured in the guidelines, but need to be on the table for discussion to see whether or not they should enter into the guidelines document or whether they should be taken up separately. The first of those, and Doyle, I'm summarizing here, trying to summarize what you offered, was Doyle points out that he's still not clear, and I think that this may be true for others of us, about how the SAT arrives at recommendations. This goes back to a discussion that transpired real early about whether we are voting and coming to agreement on and making decisions, or whether we're just sort of running through these documents and editing them and moving on. And I think that Doyle's comment will be manifest today, because I think that what we need to do is to approve these guidelines as a group rather than just simply take more edits and comments. The second comment Doyle made had to do with the individual SAT members when they are interacting with the Blue Ribbon Task Force in presenting a view that may not be consistent with the SAT's view as a whole. Is there room for a minority opinion, and how is that going to be expressed if we find that we do have a viable minority view that comes out of the group? And the third comment is essentially addressing the issue about making recommendations, whether individuals are going to be asked to abstain unless they are speaking on behalf of the SAT, or whether an individual can clearly indicate that that is his or her recommendation rather than the SAT's recommendation as a whole. Because I think, Mark, you and I know that we could be asked, you could be asked, well, what is your recommendation on this as a representative of the SAT speaking? And if, in fact, the SAT has not come to an overall consensus and made a viable recommendation, are you just to say, no, I abstain from making one, or you have license to go ahead and say, yes, this is my personal recommendation. It has not been vetted by the group as a whole. That's the third issue. So I'm not sure that any of those issues are necessarily captured in the guidelines as they now stand, or whether we might want to approve what we have and then look to edit it to incorporate those issues as an amended version. And I think that that's what I would like to recommend, that that we go ahead and if no one has any objections, and of course if you have some you should bring them up, but if we're happy with what we have, I think we should go ahead and adopt these with the same philosophy that we've adopted other documents, that is that this is a working document and that we might see amendments to it that we would come to agreement with here as a group in future meetings, but we would be able to get those crystallized and put some new language in and move forward. But we would see this as an approved document that is much like the master plan framework in concept, that it is a document that is still living and moving, but we've reached this milestone at this point in time. So with that, I think we should open up the floor for any discussion.
On Doyle's third point, it does say that when members are in front of the Blue Ribbon Task Force, they can make statements that are personal statements, as long as they make it clear that that's what they are.
That's not correct, because if you go to page the third page of the document and you go into the section that says SAT interactions with the Blue Ribbon Task Force, and if you go down to the second paragraph, second sentence in that second paragraph, when asked to make recommendations, you can see that on the screen, individuals will abstain unless they are speaking on behalf of the SAT. That is the essence of Doyle's third point.
Oh, that's different than what I recall.
The first sentence says what you were recalling.
Oh, yeah, when commenting before the
When asked.
Individual will clearly advise when they are expressing a view that.
So if we believe that individual members can make recommendations that they personally make, If we would like to see that in the document, then what we can do is eliminate that last sentence in its entirety. And
yeah.
The first sentence will carry the spirit and intent of an individual being able to say what they're saying based on their personal viewpoints, because that's what that first sentence says. It says, you're expressing a view that is your own, and that's where we are. So we could eliminate that last sentence.
I think as written now, it actually covers well the intent of what you're trying to do, in that an individual might have a difference of opinion, but with regards to recommending to the task force what should they do, it needs to come from the SAT as a whole. And I think the paragraph above actually does adequately deal with that and is consistent with the charter of this group, in that if multiple equally valid scientific choices are available, which is the case in many occasions, then it's the requirement of the science advisory team to describe the choices. You're not choosing one or the other and presenting both of them as possibilities for the task force. If at that point the task force asked, well, which one of these do you prefer, again, you'd fall back on this, we're not making that recommendation, they're scientifically equal. So that I think is important, and I think helps address some of what Doyle's asking.
I just want to be clear on what's happening here. I can imagine a situation where you'll have the task force present and you'll have a couple of folks from the SAT present, and they're going to ask you a question, and you're not going to know what the rest of the SAT would say in that situation, and yet they're asking you information. And so in a situation like that, you're going to have two choices. Either say, I can't speak in behalf of the SAT because I don't know what their collective thought would be, or I am able to give you an opinion based on my own personal opinion and the expertise I have, but I want to make that distinction clear. And so are we excluding the possibility of that second thing happening?
I think it's both. I think you just say that I can't speak on behalf of the SAT, but my own opinion is
okay.
This.
So we're saying that it is okay then to express. Okay,
but again, the way you phrased it, and I do want to make sure everybody's on the same page, the way you phrased it is you're providing information, you're providing an answer to an informative question. That's different than what do you recommend we do as the task force.
I got you.
And I do not think it's appropriate for an individual without talking to the rest of the science advisory team to provide that sort of recommendation. Mark's jumping in.
So I think you're right, but I don't think that the text makes clear what you've stated, John. Because in one sentence it uses the term advise, and the second it uses the term recommendation. You're going to have to make something that makes more explicit the point that you're trying to make.
The important distinction is between recommendation and simple
information. So as long as that's cleaned up, I think.
Yeah.
Steve, are you good there? What do you think?
Well, I think this is a very interesting and critical point. I don't think anybody here disagrees with the concept that we should not go before the Blue Ribbon Task Force and make a recommendation that sounds or has any ability to be traced to coming from the group as a whole, unless the group as a whole has made a decision. I don't think anybody disagrees with that. The question becomes, if you're asked, and I could see this could have come up at the Pasadena meeting if I would have been asked in the little talk I gave about the biogeographic regions, what was my opinion, what did I recommend, which could have come from a question from the Blue Ribbon Task Force side with regard to the number of biogeographic regions. I do not think that I should be constrained to say I have to abstain and cannot answer that question. I think what I should do is I should say, be able to answer that question by saying that the SAT as a whole has not reached an opinion on that. That's something we need to do. But if you're asking me what my personal recommendation would be, it would be blank. And I think that I should be able to do that. And I think that's what we're really talking about here. But clarity in communication is critical and important. And I think we're going to be finding ourselves in those positions from time to time. I think, Mark, you were asked at the Pasadena meeting what your recommendation was on an issue that you explained from your perspective, from your position, you offered an answer. So I think one way to handle this, as I said, is we could just simply line out that sentence. And it removes the word recommendation, and it still allows each member here to indicate what their viewpoint is as long as they clearly express it as their own. But I think everybody ought to weigh in on this one.
Steve, do you want to edit that online here and then so we can...
Heather, line out the sentence when asked to make... That's it.
Okay, we want to eliminate that. Okay. Now, Astrid? Oh, I'm sorry, Doyle.
Thank you, Steve. I think you did a very good job of summarizing what the points I was trying to make, and I think by taking out that sentence, it covers a lot of what was bothering me about that statement, and I think it gives a clear message as to how we can inform the BRTF. There, one other point, though, I think that isn't covered, like I said, I do like what you've recommended, and I like removing that. I guess what I have is more of a mechanism question, and that is how do we actually arrive at a SAT recommendation, and I don't think we've addressed that as yet, and I would like the group to discuss that. In my mind, things have happened, things have been come to the BRTF and to the Central Coast region that supposedly represent the SAT, when in fact I don't think they do. There's no minority opinion. There's no mechanism for deciding what is the SAT recommendation. And so,
Doyle, I'd like to ask for an example of that. What do you think went to the task force that did not represent a well-vetted view of the SAT?
I personally am not comfortable with the concept of sizing MPAs based on larval transport. There was some discussion of that. I was in the meeting. I commended the people for the work they'd done on that, but I raised some other issues regarding that. They were not addressed. This went forward as a recommendation of the whole SAT, but there was, in my mind, no vote taken on that. There was, it was just sort of, this is going to go forward, and yet I don't think my questions were addressed.
Do you feel you were not provided the opportunity to edit or say, I don't think these should go forward?
The opportunity was there. It was something that I was not personally extremely familiar with. The first time I'd really heard about it was at that meeting, and I don't feel that I was fully prepared to make that decision.
Can I say something on that real quick?
Okay, we'll go Steve and then Mark.
So, you know, this is an issue that I raised, I think, several meetings ago. This all goes away if we actually vote. Because if you wanted to abstain, Doyle, or vote negatively on, let's say, an adoption of a particular document, then that would be clear that the SAT, you know, agreed with this 15-3 or whatever. And if you then wanted to produce a minority statement, I think that's perfectly consistent with the kind of dialogue we have here. But what we haven't done is we haven't come to a vote on documents that we produce. So unless we do that, there will always be the idea that, well, somebody who wasn't here, they didn't have an opportunity, they may have a different view, or somebody who was here didn't feel that their view was represented to the level it was. And personally, I'm pretty comfortable with everything that we've moved forward, except for the biogeographic province issue, which I think was biologically indefensible. But that's something that comes back later from my perspective. So I would say that what I'd like to have us do is vote to adopt these guidelines as a working working set of guidelines. And if amendments need to be made, then so be it. We'll make amendments as we proceed. But at least we have something codified for us at this stage in the game.
Can I say as the chair that in the future, if anybody feels like something needs a vote, please raise it then and there and say that this is something I think we should vote on.
I think we ought to, given this concern that both Steve and Doyle have raised about past decisions that in reviewing the tapes I feel were very well vetted among the SAT, and I did review both of those decisions based on your comments, I would propose adding a final portion to this document that regarding SAT decisions, and I would say that when substantive decisions or recommendations are made, the SAT shall ensure that all members support the action taken. Where available science presents either options or uncertainty, the science team shall frame and refer those policy questions to the Blue Ribbon Task Force. Essentially, that opens the door for a quote-unquote minority decision. And I don't think minority decision is the way to phrase it, because essentially if it's supported by the science, who cares how many of you support it? It's supported by data and backed up. So the idea and the intent in the charter that we presented to all of you when we appointed you to this team was that you don't make policy decisions. If the science says there are two options, you give those two options. And I don't necessarily want to say you're going to vote on everything, because you might not, but ensuring that all of you support the action taken is important, and the way to do that might be either in a vote in the meeting or passing around final versions of the document via email and saying, does anybody have final edits? And if the answer is no, then it's okay. So I would recommend going ahead and adding this in there so that you are all very clear as to what a decision is.
Okay, I think Astrid, you beat Steve by a microphone.
I had a couple of comments, I guess. The first one was just to, by way of seeking closure on that third item that Doyle had raised and that we seem to have taken care of. So if I understand our action correctly there, we have eliminated that sentence about refraining from making recommendations, and it's sort of relegated to the basic good judgment that unless you're explicitly speaking on behalf of the SAT, you make it clear that you're speaking on your own behalf. Right? Okay, good. The other piece that we're discussing now about the sort of preponderance of scientific evidence and what happens if we have issues of uncertainty or sort of multiple options, I think framing this as a vote or using a voting mechanism is the wrong approach entirely.
It's like we vote on science, and I don't think we do.
Yeah, we don't.
Right, and that's why I didn't put vote in there. Even
talking about it as minority opinions or whatnot, I think it should be presented as here's the evidence. Take the larval dispersal mechanism, for example. I know nothing about marine biology. It's not my background. It's not my training. So I am, however, trained to listen to scientific discourse and to make decisions and come to some conclusion based on the evidence I'm presented. I can follow a logical argument. So what this forum should provide is the opportunity to have the scientific debate about an issue. And, you know, in this case, you might have Lou Botsford and Doyle Hannon sort of going, you know, toe-to-toe on what the current state of knowledge is. And I'm sort of the perfect audience here because I don't know one way or the other. And I haven't, you know, invested my scientific career in answering this question either. And then I think there should be a finite point in our deliberations where we say, okay, based on what we know now and based on this list of references that we can give to you, the audience or the public or the Blue Ribbon Task Force, this is the conclusion we have come to. And anybody who disagrees or has come to a different conclusion would just note that and say, yeah, I would still like to see more evidence, or I would like us to revisit this question, as more studies are forthcoming. And that, of course, is very compatible with the mandate of adaptive management of these MPAs that are being implemented. But I would just eradicate any mention of voting mechanisms or minority report.
So I've heard that twice now. Does this say anything about voting or minority opinions?
Yes.
Thank you, Astrid. Steve, do you want to follow? And then I think we need to...
Yeah, the issue of voting is not necessarily to come and vote so many for this interpretation and so many for that, but it's to say, okay, here's a document that includes the discourse on this subject matter. Here are the conclusions that have been laid out with the viewpoints fully represented. Are we happy with that? And if we are, then I think we should approve that and move on. And that's what I'm referring to by voting. I'm not saying that seven of us vote for this scientific interpretation and five of us vote for that. What I'm talking about is essentially approving a written document that goes forward to the next level, whatever it contains in it, whatever alternatives it contains in it. Now, what I would like to recommend is that we do not, that we do approve these guidelines, but we do not improve this last section right now. But what we do is we ask for people to submit language and ideas and come back at the next meeting with the last paragraph thought out and enlisted and attempt to add it to the document. One thing I've learned over the years is that, you know, you don't do very well when you try to edit documents in a large group, because you may not be happy with what you come up with when you go home and look at it the next day. This is an important issue, and I think it's one that we ought to get codified or have codified. And I think the way we go is we just add that to the document with the next go-around. It's not going to hurt us to have that not there between now and the next meeting. And I'll be happy to take those comments along with Heather, and we'll bring back the passage with the next time to add to the document. That's what I would recommend.
Okay, Steve. Let's hold that and get a comment from Mark, and then come back and approve. Basically, the proposal is to approve everything except this last line, and then come back with an amendment, basically. Yep. Okay, Mark?
Yep, I agree with what Steve is saying, that the idea is to, for the most part, edit this offline. However, I think that the meetings are a good opportunity, like Doyle has used with Steve, to raise some of these issues for us to think about offline.
Right.
And one of them that I don't think was raised yet that I wanted to mention, because others have mentioned it to me, just again to get it in onto the table, which then we can address offline perhaps, is this issue that came up at the last meeting where we're considering tools for the evaluation of MPAs that may in fact end up requiring certain members to participate with and benefit financially from. And so
right.
I think what we need to do is develop a mechanism by which those decisions are made such that they minimize perceived conflict of interest.
Thank you for bringing that up now. And I think John Kurlins will address the current status of the situation when we get to the evaluation. So, but again, that could be another amendment for this. Okay, Steve, shall we vote?
Yeah, so I think I'd like for us to agree on everything up to the line that says SAT decisions, and then we'll draft that paragraph and bring it back at the next meeting.
And with regards to members not present, I did receive an email from Mary Yaklovich saying she was fine with these as written. I doubt she would be upset by the deletion of that one sentence.
The concept of a living document as well, though, allows people to bring back to the table issues that we learn later are substantive and are worthy of that.
We do, however, need to move forward with this document because it does guide your work, and at this point we're well along the way through the work. So I strongly recommend that these last two issues be addressed quickly offline, and that the team as a whole be queried via email if they like the final version of the document, so we can come back at the next meeting and not spend yet another half an hour talking about a draft document.
Okay, so the motion that's on the table is to approve the guidelines as presented here, except for the last paragraph. Is there a second? No. Okay. More discussion?
But at the same time, you know, Steve has brought up this point that it's still something of a living document, so that if we have a few edits
Absolutely.
Here and there, right, they will. We're voting that we still have the ability to continue to edit this to some extent.
Okay, so modified. The motion is basically to approve the guidelines as presented here with the understanding that they will be amended. Probably very shortly.
That sounds fine.
Yeah.
Is that your point, Steve? You're good with that?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think, look, what has been done with the master plan framework? It's been adopted by the commission with the concept that it can be altered and moved. And it's a living document, but it's the best we've got at this point in time. So I think that the concept here is that this is, we're not, if anybody's unhappy with anything that's written here, and you think that something is significant enough that needs to be addressed, then you should bring it up right now. But if you're not, then I think that we should be able to move forward with this document, with the idea that if there are issues that arise, such as the two that we now have on the table, the decision-making issue, the conflict of interest issues, those can be added to this document. Or if we see anything else that requires significant attention, that those would be brought forward as well.
Okay, I think it really is important that we get some stake in the ground, so to speak, because we are doing things. We do have to have some kind of guiding document in place. So, can we vote on? Is there a second to the motion that we accept the guidelines, except for the last paragraph here, with the understanding that there will be continued amendment.
So are we cutting off discussion right now?
For today.
I've been holding my comment because we're dealing with a couple of things that Doyle brought up in these, and so they're still...
Okay.
I mean,
let's discuss.
Yeah. I mean, it may be minor, you may be able to dismiss it, but if that's okay. On the second page under the spatial MPA proposals, there's sort of two questions. One is, I'm not sure what a spatial MPA is referring to. In the second paragraph, it says the STAT will evaluate proposals for spatial MPAs using a set of predetermined and publicly available criteria. I've been out of the loop a bit, but is there a predetermined and publicly available set of criteria? And what's this referring to?
We'll talk about those on the next agenda item.
Those are the tools. That's what you're preparing for your evaluation criteria. Yeah. I mean the discussion at the last meeting was that the team needs to be clear up front as to how they are examining proposals. And so that's the whole evaluation criteria discussion.
Okay.
Right. You're okay?
Yeah. Right. But I'm still wondering about the whole spatial MPA.
I would recommend removing the word spatial throughout the document.
Spatial was embedded everywhere in the last document. So
that's,
I figured somebody knew better than I, although...
I think MPA proposals is fine because MPAs by definition
is
are spatial.
Is that even better? Okay. Let's remove that. Yes, Mark, please.
Just another comment on the. So I agree. That's what I was hoping to delete the term spatial throughout this thing. Secondly, under guidelines for SAT regional subteams, the first sentence of that SAT paragraph, and then also request for information. Individual SAT members may receive multiple requests. My concern here is that both the first sentence in both of these paragraphs suggests that anybody can go to any SAT member and start asking questions, whereas we've really tried to develop a mechanism by which all questions are directed, say, through the web or through a stakeholder group meeting. Those questions are vetted by a mechanism we've created before which they are then identified for allocated to particular SAT members. I don't like the idea of a tone of this text suggesting that anybody and their mother can contact me with questions about MLPA stuff. So I want to make sure that the text clearly it you know identifies a mechanism that's established for
addressing
questions.
A lot of that has been thought through really carefully on the Central Coast. Can we modify the motion to say that, Mark, you will draft something that's acceptable to you and put it in? Okay. And okay, now can we vote on that if there's a second to that motion? Who's going to second it?
Second.
Doyle? Okay. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Unanimous. Okay. Thank you. And please, I'm not trying to ram things through. I'm just trying to expedite. And again, it's important that we do have something in place as soon as possible. Okay. The next agenda item is the regional objectives, goals and objectives. And John, are you going to lead that?
I'll start off, and there's going to be some overlap between items here. The Central Coast Stakeholder Group is working on a list of regional goals and objectives, and the most current list that's been looked at by the group was forwarded to you as part of the evaluation criteria spreadsheet, which I handily have copies of. So I'll take and send a couple that way. This spreadsheet we're going to talk about more in detail in the next item, but because the regional goals and objectives play a role in evaluation, it's important to discuss them initially. And what you'll see starting on the second page of the handout that's coming around, and you received this last week, there are the goals and the objectives, as well as a little bit of information on what we thought you might use to measure those objectives. What the stakeholder group has done essentially is adopted as goals the goals of the Marine Life Protection Act. They decided that it wasn't appropriate for them to start crafting more or different goals for their region, but that they wanted to look at the objectives supporting those goals and find ways to achieve the goals that meet the needs of their region. They have not adopted these objectives in whole yet. They began the discussion and they got through, I believe, goal 3, objective 1, and they're still discussing the rest. And as we get down to them, you'll see that we have some recommendations that we've made to the Central Coast team as to how to address those objectives. I think it's probably valuable to quickly review the goals and objectives so you all hear them and have a flavor of all of them. So I'll run through them right now. And then I think the discussion today should focus on a couple of things. First, do you as the science team have any input for the stakeholder group with regards to these objectives? Can they be made better? Can they somehow change them or improve them to make them scientifically more useful? And then also, as we move forward today to talk about evaluation, how might these objectives impact how you evaluate existing or proposed MPAs in the area? So the first goal, same as the goal of the Act, is to protect the natural diversity and abundance of marine life and the structure, function, and integrity of the marine ecosystems. And their first objective is protect areas of high species diversity and maintain species diversity and abundance consistent with natural fluctuations of populations in representative habitats. And I think I'll run through all of the objectives and goals first, and then we can open discussion to see how you feel about them. The second objective, protect areas with diverse habitat types in close proximity to each other. The third, maintain natural size and age structure and genetic diversity of populations in representative habitats. Fourth, maintain natural trophic structure and food webs in representative habitats. And the fifth, maintain ecosystem structure, function, integrity, and ecological processes to facilitate recovery of natural communities from perturbations, both natural and human-induced. Goal 2, to help sustain, conserve, and protect marine life populations, including those of economic value, and rebuild those that are depleted. The first objective, help protect or rebuild populations of rare, threatened, endangered, depleted, or overfished species where identified, and the habitats and ecosystem functions upon which they rely. And as you see, some of these are going to start relating to your discussion on species of interest. Protect larval sources and enhance reproductive capacity of species most likely to benefit from MPA through retention of large, mature individuals. Objective 3, protect selected species and the habitats on which they depend while allowing the harvest of migratory, highly mobile, or other species where appropriate through the use of state marine conservation areas and state marine parks. Goal 3, to improve recreational, educational, and study opportunities provided by marine ecosystems that are subject to minimal human disturbances and to manage these uses in a manner consistent with protecting biodiversity. And here in these objectives is where the discussion among the stakeholders needs to continue further. The first, ensure some MPAs, including reserves, are close to population centers, research and education institutions, and traditional non-consumptive recreational use, and are accessible for recreational, educational, and study opportunities. Objective 2, to the extent possible, provide replicate state marine reserves to function as reference areas for research and monitoring to assess impacts of human use activities and natural events. And you see there's some proposed editorial revisions there. Objective 3, develop collaborative scientific monitoring and research projects evaluating MPAs that link with classroom science curricula, volunteer dive programs, and fishermen of all ages, and identify participants. Objective 4, protect or enhance recreational experience by ensuring natural size and age structure of marine populations for observation, photography, and other non-consumptive uses. You'll note that staff has proposed deleting this at the stakeholder subgroup meeting yesterday. There was significant discussion of this particular objective, and it's unlikely that it will be deleted, but it may be modified or a second objective emphasizing consumptive uses could potentially be added. Objective 5, improve public outreach related to MPAs through the use of docents, improve signage, and production of an educational brochure for Central Coast MPAs. Goal 4, to protect marine natural heritage, including protection of representative and unique marine life habitats in Central California waters for their intrinsic values. The first objective, identify and protect unique habitats, such as estuaries, heads of submarine canyons, pinnacles, upwelling centers, and larval retention areas for their intrinsic value. Here we had proposed making this more broad because the definition of unique habitats is somewhat variable depending on who you talk to and difficult to ascertain what is unique. The discussion yesterday on this particular objective was leaning towards actually making it more specific and suggesting a list of habitats that should be included in the overall proposal, however, not necessarily labeling those habitats as unique. So in other words, if there are particular habitats that people are interested in, such as the ones listed here, that you strive to include them in the overall proposal, but because of the fact that the Act discusses both unique and representative habitats, why worry about what is truly unique? So again, they haven't come to a conclusion on that discussion yet. The second objective, protect representatives of all marine habitats identified in the Marine Life Protection Act or the Master Plan Framework across a range of depths for their intrinsic value. Goal 5, to ensure that the Central California's marine protected areas have clearly defined objectives, effective management measures, and adequate enforcement, and are based on sound scientific guidelines. In the first objective, for each MPA, develop objectives, a long-term monitoring plan that includes standardized biological and socioeconomic monitoring protocols, and a strategy for MPA evaluation, and ensure that each MPA objective is linked to one or more regional objective. The proposed revision is for all MPAs in the region, noting two things. First, that you may have a management plan that encompasses more than one MPA, so you might not have individual management plans. And secondarily, noting that whatever plans you create will include existing areas. It's not just the new ones that are being discussed. So existing areas would have management plans crafted as well. And again, no decision made on that edit yet. Objective two, in developing alternative MPA proposals, consider existing state and federal programs, including but not limited to those related to water quality, fisheries management, species recovery, and those of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. Objective three, to the extent possible, site MPAs adjacent to terrestrial, federal, state, county, or city parks, or marine laboratories, or other eyes on the water to facilitate management, enforcement, and monitoring. And this is the first of several that we've actually proposed moving to design considerations. They're not truly objectives that individual MPAs will meet, but they're things to consider when you're deciding where to site MPAs. The group yesterday was very comfortable with that proposal to move these to design considerations. Yes?
When you say move to design, does that mean remove them then from evaluating existing MPAs or have them in both?
Design considerations would be within the overall design for the region, so you would need to consider that in looking at existing ones as well, because that's part of the whole review. They just wouldn't be an objective, and in some ways it's nice because it takes it out of the need to find some specific measurable criteria that you evaluate based on, but it's something you consider. Let's see, that was objective three. Objective four, if necessary, phase the implementation of Central Coast MPAs to ensure their effective management, monitoring, enforcement. This one, initially we proposed deleting it as an objective, and the discussion has sort of further developed to the fact that this is an implementation consideration. Again, it's not an objective, and it's something that the agencies have already stated they would address. But the proposal is to move this into a consideration for implementation, that it's important, it's discussed in the framework and in the Act, but again, it's not phasing is not an objective, it's a potential for implementation. Objective five, to the extent possible, site MPAs to facilitate use of volunteers. Again, citing consideration, this one we propose moving to a design consideration. Objectives six, again, citing to encompass long-term monitoring studies, the proposal is to move that to a design consideration. Objective seven, develop regional management and enforcement measures, including cooperative enforcement agreements, adaptive management, and jurisdictional maps, which can be effectively used, adopted statewide, and periodically reviewed. Objective eight, to the extent possible, design MPA boundaries to facilitate ease of public recognition and enforcement. Again, there's some discussion now about moving some of these to design considerations, but they haven't been fully vetted. Objective 9, to the extent possible, effectively utilize scientific guidelines in the master plan framework, including size and spacing of MPAs and the overall design of individual MPAs. Objective 10, secure funding for monitoring, management, and enforcement before adequate, and there's got to be a typo here, but before implementing, it must be adequate funding before implementing any new MPAs. And again, this one we're recommending either deleting or moving to an implementation recommendation. And then finally, goal six, to ensure that the Central Coast MPAs are designed and managed to the extent possible as a component of a statewide network. And here's the only major change to the MLPA goals, and it's in recognizing that the Central Coast is not even a complete bioregion, and therefore you may not have a complete network within the Central Coast, but that it's a portion of the whole statewide network. Objective one, to the extent possible, effectively utilize science guidelines in the master plan framework, including those related. So that's a repeat of an earlier objective. Objective two, develop a regional review and evaluation of implementation effectiveness to determine if regional MPAs are an effective component of the statewide network. And objective three, develop a mechanism to coordinate with future MLPA regional stakeholder groups in other regions. So you can see there's a broad array of objectives, and your input as the science team can have several facets. First, if there's a particular objective that you think is close but maybe not measurable, you might recommend some editorial language to the group. Is close but maybe Second, not measurable. For whatever objectives are, you might recommend some editorial adopted, you need to consider the language to the group, how these objectives would be. Second, measure for whatever objectives are adopted and what sort of science questions did you need to consider, how are they going to raise for you as a group. And what you can see is that for each, we have provided a how do you measure it column, a proposed benchmark, and some specific questions to you. Starting right, these objectives would be measured with the first one, and what sort of objective one, protect areas of science, questions are high species diversity, are they going to raise for you? The question becomes as a group. And what you can see is that what is the amount of each habitat for each, we within each MPA have provided a how do you measure, you know, how much of each different habitat column, a prototype is encompassed by an imposed MPA, and then benchmark. Also, we have this list in the current draft of the regional profile about areas of and some specific questions to you. Biological, starting right, diversity signal with the first one, objective one, protect significance. And I want to pass that around. And Mary, I don't know, do you want to talk about this now or in evaluation or area or both of high species diversity? Or
I think people can just look at it. It's a draft list we wanted to get some comments on in this afternoon's agenda, so I don't think we need to spend time on it now, but
okay.
I think we should focus on the issue of measurability of objectives.
Okay. So
specificity.
So noting that question, there is some information that we'll talk about later, and we'll get into the detail of area. What is the amount of each habitat within each MPA, you know, how much of each different habitat type is encompassed by an MPA. And then also we have this list biodiversity in the significance later, but the current draft of the, we think you regional profile can do a quality about areas of the set biological biodiversity significance. And I want to pass that around. Assessment of the presence of habitats within MPAs and make some qualitative. I don't know. Do you want to talk about this now or in evaluation or decision? Both or depends on how diverse are.
I think people can just look at it. It's a draft list we wanted to get some comments on in this afternoon's agenda, so I don't think we need to spend time on it now, but
okay.
I think we should focus on the
tats and
issue of measurability of objectives.
And therefore, okay, so
specificity.
So how diverse might be. Noting that there is species B in an area. Some information that we'll talk about later, and we'll get into the detail of areas of biodiversity significance later, but we think you can do a qualitative assessment of the presence of habitats within MPAs and make some qualitative decisions. They depends on how diverse this point are the habitats and therefore how diverse might species be in it. Maybe open area in the floor or to any general comments or discussion from the team about the objectives. I'd say at this point maybe open the floor to any general comments or discussion from the team about the objectives. Based on what you just heard, yeah, I don't know, does anybody have any comments or questions or concerns or interests? On what you just heard, yeah, I don't know. Does anybody have any comments or questions or concerns or interests?
In several of these, it mentions maintain natural size and age structure, and in several of these, it mentions. I just wondered how you're going to define that. Natural size and age.
Good question.
Structure.
and it's one that we've talked about internally a little bit. Our only as staff's
and
thought on that is if you assume that,
just wondered how
not removing
you're going to define
species helps maintain its natural. Good question, and it's one that we've talked about internally a little bit. Structure, then you. Our only as staff's thought on that is would if you simply go by the regulations and if you assume the individual area that not remove and assume that you have achieved that objective if you're not removing that particular species. That does not address moving us interactions between species, but that was the only way we saw species as a way to measure that objective. Helps maintain very open to hearing comments from the team as to whether you think that, and I don't know if these are different comments, let's maybe natural age structure, then you would talk about simply go by the regulations one from emulations in any individual area and assume back that you have achieved you guys set up that objective if you're okay. Mary had a comment.
I just wanted to sort of raise a
moving that particular species. That does not address interactions between species, but that was the only way we saw as a way to measure that objective. I'm very open to hearing comments from the team as to whether you think that, and I don't know if these are different comments, let's maybe talk
about that,
this one for a minute, and we'll come back to you. Guys, seven. Okay.
You know,
Mary had a comment.
These objectives, we have to. I just wanted to sort of raise a distinction, come up with long-term monitoring indication that so ultimately, you know, with these objectives, we have to. You might, you know, measure, come up with long-term monitoring size structure and follow monitoring in over time, and that's a different process than this sort of snapshot view. Today, how are we going to know indicator if this MPA is contributing to others? So ultimately, this objective, you might, you know, measure size structure and follow it over time. And that's a different process than this sort of snapshot view. Today, how are we going to know if this MPA is contributing towards this objective? So there's sort of almost two types. So there's sort of indicators for these objectives. There's the one sort of we can measure today, and then the ones that we would design a monitoring plan to measure over time. Almost two types of indicators for these objectives. There's
right.
The ones we can measure today, and then the ones that we would design a monitoring plan to measure over time.
Right, I think that's a good point. So if the assumption today is that not removing a species helps it achieve its natural age and size structure, I think that's a good point. So if the assumption today is that not could evaluate removing a species helps it achieve its natural weight, what exists based on that? And then the long-term monitoring would be to determine are you actually achieving that objective based on measuring size and age structure in areas. Is that?
Yeah, I guess my question is not so much how you'd measure it, because you could certainly identify change. It's just, well, what's your target, and how are you going to define that?
Right.
Because, and then you've got all sorts of species-species interactions in addition to human interactions and indirect things, and so I don't have an answer. But if you're laying this down, this assumes that a target has been identified,
mm-hmm.
and I'm just wondering how that target will be identified.
And I think you're going to see that in a lot of these objectives, that it's going to be very difficult, because they're not terribly specific objectives, to find targets, to know if you've met the objective or not. Mark, you want to?
Yeah, well, I wonder, rather than trying to identify a target as, a specific size structure of a population, instead, if the target is a predicted change based on the assumptions of protection. Mm-hmm. So, for example, I mean, obviously, when you're referring to a targeted size structure, you're predicting a shift toward larger sized individuals relative to areas that are not protected, populations that are not protected, mm-hmm. right? Or less protected, sorry. So the response variable used for evaluation is the relative trajectories, sort of like the economic models, right? Rather than a particular size structure or population density that is based on some assumption that we probably don't have the information to generate.
So potential might be.
It's the predicted. Right, trajectory or trend, yeah. Predicted yeah. response trend.
That's very similar to what we did in the Channel Islands monitoring plan, mm-hmm. where essentially we said it's almost impossible based on existing science to say we think sheephead average size will grow by 20%. I mean,
right.
it was almost impossible because of the range and so the upshot was that success was defined as an increasing average size for this particular target species in comparison to areas outside.
Exactly.
So it was actually a differential change. And I'm just trying to capture that.
And I would argue that is probably the response variable that would be used for evaluation as well.
So now the question to the science team might be, would you prefer to see the objective be very clear about that? In other words, should the objective be have a differential increase in size structure within MPAs compared to areas outside? Or is that more of a how do you measure it?
And I agree with that, because otherwise you're going to be in a situation of arguing what's the target, coming up with specific quantitative targets, and you'll never come to an agreement. And even if you did, you may never achieve it. Or if you overshoot it, I mean, so no, I think the trend is really what you're looking for, as compared to maybe before or as compared to an outside control site. And, mm-hmm. and so it's really that relative change, because there could be all
right.
sorts of environmental factors that'll come in and just blow you out of the water in terms of your target, but your trends may be okay.
Mm-hmm. So you think include that in the objective, or just include it in the essentially this matrix that we're putting together as far as how do you measure it or the proposed benchmark?
Well, my concern with not including it in the objective is that you'll get the stakeholders arguing
yeah.
forever.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to do this? So you have to make the objective something that can be evaluated. Otherwise, we're going to get bogged down in arguments among the stakeholders as to how to approach this whole thing.
Okay. Mary, what last word on this, and then we'll go to a new topic.
Yeah, just a quick comment. I mean, just having been with the stakeholders in these discussions, I think it's really important for you all to know that they're asking for your help on that type of thing. They're not going to know what target species, what thresholds are appropriate for these objectives. So I think it's really important to have that input.
Oh, Mike, did you want to talk to this one? Or try and make it hot.
John, it might be helpful to have a small work team that breaks out at some point to just craft the specific language in this objective, maybe at lunch or something like that with the people that do this kind of hands-on research. So,
okay. Yeah, we've got a stakeholder group meeting coming up next week.
Yeah.
So the sooner you all can come up with some specific suggestions, and then maybe Mark can deliver them at the meeting. That would be helpful, and we'll let's talk about it at lunch maybe,
yeah.
and we'll try and figure out how to move that forward.
Okay. But this is kind of a general issue, though, is in terms of the nature of the targets or objectives you're trying to find. Not just with size and structure; it could be water quality, any number of things. And so, are you going to be looking for trends or a specific
hard number.
Benchmark, right. And I think that's a good question to phrase back to the Central Coast group so they understand the issue that they've sort of created. So let's go to...
I guess based on our discussion this morning when we were talking about the guidelines about what the SAT is going to recommend or not recommend, I was hoping that you could just, John, just kind of reiterate specifically what you want this group to do today on this topic. I mean, you've kind of talked about several things, and we dove right into a specific detail, which is fine if that's where you want us to go.
I actually think that it will be helpful, but just to maybe clearly state what we can do today in the time allotted is perhaps if we quickly run through the objectives and look at essentially what staff has come up with the proposal for how do you measure it instantaneously. And then that will help clarify the ones that the SAP wants to weigh in on with regards to how might you change the objective or recommendations you might make back to the Central Coast group. This will, I think, be somewhat of an iterative process, but we are trying to get the Central Coast group honed in on objectives soon so they can start using those objectives to develop alternatives. So it may be that the SAT advice to them is simply you need to be a little more specific on all of them, and that's about as far as you can go. I'm not sure, but I would like to spend, I think, a little time today going through individual objectives and talking about questions like that that we can knock off fairly quickly with regards to differential change makes sense here, measuring total numbers of habitats makes sense there, etc.
Okay, so two things. You basically want us to go through the goals and objectives and make sure those are right or complete or something
close.
Like that.
Yeah.
Yes. And then the second thing is to go through the two columns that basically staff has started putting together.
Yeah.
And go, does this make sense?
Do these make sense as a benchmark? And essentially, when we went through it as staff, again, we were thinking about how might you evaluate this instantaneously, not over time, because the first step we have to do is go through and evaluate existing areas and propose new areas. And so it's some of them you'll see our response is this is a future need. You can't evaluate it instantaneously. John and then Steve. John, maybe you, and then we'll go to Steve and Linwood.
I wanted to invite just a modification way to think about this, because working with the stakeholder group, there will be a lot of effort expended in changing this wording. So I think that one of the things that would be most helpful in the conversation about can you really get an endpoint or are you really talking about trends, lines, is very helpful. So I think it would be beneficial if we came out of this work together, and this is a response to Ken's question also, with a judgment from the available science advisory team members of this should be expressed as either a trend comparison or an endpoint, A or B. And then effectively empower the staff to revise that, because I think that's going to happen in this group with the science advisory subteam and back to the stakeholder group, so that we get but at least we clearly get a check off of this ought to be expressed as a trend line. Now, what I'm a little bit confused on is how we handle the difference between the assessment of the existing MPAs and the design of new MPAs and the eventual monitoring and evaluation, because a lot of the monitoring and evaluation will inevitably be trend lines, it seems to me. And I don't know how to separate those right now in so some conversation amongst the scientists might be helpful in that regard. Since we have to both evaluate the existing MPAs and do a design exercise that will be done in the next 3 months, what should we be looking at, even though in the long run we may want trend information? Is that clear?
Can I get one more point of clarification? Is how does the things that staff has gone through in terms of trying to quantify, how does that fit with what our evaluation is going to be when the proposals come in? Are we going to use these criteria?
Well, that, yeah, that's it's sort of we're giving you some straw man for how you might measure this, and we essentially just took a crack at it in a brief time period, saying is this. Can we provide anything to measure this?
I'm glad you did. Yeah. It's actually helpful, I think, for this group to do that. I'm just trying to get clear whether this is what we're going to use ultimately.
I think it'll help form a part of that. And as we talk about evaluation, we can go into a lot more detail on that.
Okay, well, I'll let Linwood get his comment in, and then I'll start trying to get your objectives done.
Yeah. Go ahead, Linwood.
Do you have a follow-up, Mike? Or no? You have an independent thought?
I have an independent thought, so you go, Linwood.
So I have some comments on two objectives, and then I just wanted to follow up on John's a little bit and say or remind or ask that design of new MPAs includes modification of existing MPAs, right?
Yeah. Yes. That's why I keep reiterating that for evaluation, the first step is evaluate what's there, and then we start talking about what you might do to it or.
Say design of MPAs, not new MPAs. So I want to start with goal 4 because this is the easiest point. And goal 4 includes the term intrinsic value, and then every objective underneath of it includes intrinsic value. And that, of course, is a concept that's impossible to quantify. Mm-hmm. And I think when we say intrinsic value, what we really mean is without regard to economic value. So why don't we put a footnote in the goal that says here taken to mean without regard for environmental value, and then remove intrinsic value from all of the objectives. Would you say?
Without regard to economic value, you said environmental.
Oh, right, sorry. Without regard to economic value. My brain only sort of focuses in on the first letter. You never know what word you're going to get. Okay, so that's the first. And then the second is, with goal 3, there are quite a number of kinds of use data and access data that we could get for all of these existing marine protected areas, including things like parking and facilities that are available that would describe recreational access opportunities. So if we have them, why not get them? You know, parking, facilities, entry fees. And then thinking
I'm sorry, so goal 3?
So goal 3 is, you know, to improve recreational and educational. And so part of these things are about access. So you have with objective 1 distance, which is really important. And then but part and parcel of distance is access. And there are ways of measuring access. And so I think number of parking spaces and entry fees and what facilities are available or access points, things like that.
So that's another instantaneous measure that we could add to this with regards to, you know, how do you ensure they're accessible?
That's right. Yeah, so if some place is really close and it only has 2 parking spaces,
right?
You know, like Point Doom in Southern California, you know, it's not very accessible. And then looking beyond the Central Coast, because it says to improve recreation, education, and other opportunities, there are a lot of studies, including you can imagine sort of doing a longer version of the LaFranchi-type study where we actually identify attributes that are important for different recreational opportunities, and so we have information about the presence or absence of those attributes in marine protected areas.
And that actually, and I may need to connect with you offline about this, but objective 4 is one that we had a lot of discussion yesterday with the stakeholders about with this protect or enhance recreational experience. And my comment was, how are you going to measure that? How are you going to say that you've enhanced the recreational experience? So attributes, if we have specific measurable attributes, that would really help that goal. Another issue that came up with objective 4, as long as I'm mentioning it, is that the Act does not say non-consumptive recreation only. That goal can include recreational fishing, and so how might you enhance recreational fishing through the use of MPAs? And that's part of why I say that objective may be split into 2 or dramatically revised.
Yeah, I don't think it needs to be split into 2 because the ways of measuring these things is similar, whether it's consumptive or non-consumptive. So I think that's okay. I think unless the Act requires that we manage for natural size and age structure, then having those 2 delimited there is limiting because they're going to be important for some kinds of recreational uses and completely irrelevant for others.
Right.
So why not just get rid of that and then open it up and this is the kind of thing I can help you with. If we're talking about sort of ad hoc, you know, we can look through the literature and find out what's important for different kinds of recreational activities.
I think you and I need to talk about Objective 4, because, and maybe Astrid can join in on that, because this is a difficult objective that we spent 2.5 hours with the working group yesterday on, and if we can come to them with a proposal to help move this one forward, it'd be really good. So
okay,
that's great. I think we had Steve patiently waiting, and then Mike.
So my comments go all the way back to goal one and play off of some of the things I think that Mark Carr said, if I remember that far back. So objective one and objective two begin with the word protect, and objectives 3, 4, and 5 begin with the word maintain. I'm bothered by the word maintain in terms of how I read those objectives. And I'm wondering whether some of the issue, Mark, that you raised really goes back to that. Because, for example, I think you could rewrite objective 3 to say something like, protect selected populations and representative habitats to enable the achievement of natural size and age, structure, and genetic diversity. Or you could say alternatively, protect selected populations and representative habitats to enable changes in size and age, structure, and genetic diversity over those in unprotected areas, or something to that effect. But when you say maintain, I'm not sure what we're really talking about. And mixing the action word protect and maintain, I think, is a little dangerous, particularly mm-hmm. particularly there.
Okay, so that I'll bring that one back to the group. As you may understand, some of this is a little difficult because we're dealing with a broad array of stakeholders who have different thoughts on what different words and phrases mean. So it's very difficult to get them to come to agreement on the language. But I think you make a good point that maintain natural is a very wishy-washy phrase.
Okay, so 3 points. The first was, I think Ken raised an issue about evaluation criteria, and it's my sense that what's really critical is that whatever the SAT uses, that the regional stakeholders use as well, that those be 100% the same, because if they're not, the Blue Ribbon Task Force is going to be getting different opinions about the measurement of apples and oranges. And so I think it is really critical that whatever the SAT does, that be absolutely consistent with what the regional stakeholders do. So that would be, you know, I think my first point. The other, Linwood said something about adding without regard to economic value. The concern there, Linwood, is obviously that might be a flashpoint for some people on the regional stakeholder group. Because I think it's difficult for them to distinguish between cultural value of some of these uses, traditional uses, and other sorts of economic value, and also the idea that we would be singling out that as something we were going to take out of the mix. I don't disagree that you've identified that intrinsic value and economic value are distinct, but I would just suggest that might be... That it might be not necessary to actually make that clear distinction.
Maybe you need two parallel goals, or you could imagine that within goal 3, that really to improve recreational opportunities, that's the economic value of recreation. It doesn't include commercial. But if you try to tackle intrinsic value and economic value at the same time, you're going to get diverging objectives, and so.
And this is the one set of goals and objectives where yesterday I think the group sort of did have a bit of an epiphany in first noting they don't need to repeat intrinsic value. It's in the goal, and this is an objective to achieve that goal. So I think they even discussed removing that language. And then also, again, as I said before, this idea of if you think protecting habitats such as estuaries, submarine canyon heads, etc., helps achieve that goal, it doesn't really matter if they're unique or common or anything. That is the objective to achieve the goal. So I think these objectives may actually turn out to be a lot more clean than some of the other ones that we're dealing with.
And the final point was the suggestion about removing the phrase, I think Linwood's suggestion, natural size and age structure. I think that, as my understanding, that's just providing some definition about what minimal human disturbance would be. So
yeah, and actually, and part of it was also describing what increases the experience, what enhances the experience. I think Linwood might have some better things that help define the experience as opposed to these ones. That our other issue with this objective as staff was it's almost a repeat of an earlier objective talking about natural age structure, so why do you need to say it twice? That's an ecological goal, is protecting the age structure, and the enhancing the experience we need to define some other way.
So I would say if we add something that defines the what enhancing the experience means, we probably also need to keep something in there that defines what minimal human disturbance means, so that those are balanced in terms of how that. Okay. But my first point is the most important, that we all need to be on the same page about what the criteria are, because if not, we're going to be measuring different things.
Yeah.
On the maintaining size and age structure, if you shift the frame to genetic integrity, does that help? Does that provide more concrete understanding of what we're trying to do? We're trying to hold the gene. We're trying to limit the impact of man's activities on the.
But the whole notion
structure?
Of trying to maintain something in a natural system. It's like there's all
I know
sorts
everything
of,
else is
and so
continued.
Protect, I think, actually does a better job of it than maintain. Maintain assumes some quantified level that you're going to buffer against variation about, and that's impossible to do. But you can protect it with respect to other impacted areas.
Yeah. We're protecting the genetic integrity of the population by maintaining age and size.
I just don't think. I think you got to get the word maintain out of there, frankly.
I agree. But does it help to introduce the notion of genetic integrity?
I think that's another important thing. But then to do that, then you've got to. That's a whole other thing you're going to start measuring, is you're going to start measuring the genome.
I just thought that we were making really rapid progress. And no, just. I learned over the weekend that you can actually clone your pets now, cats and dogs, I think. So, and even if the pet is dead, if you can get 5 teeth, they can go to work, and there's a possibility, and it costs about $20,000.
So let me just point out why, from a non-biological perspective, I think even thinking about maintaining genetic diversity or something like that is the wrong way to think about it, because the ecosystem that we're trying to protect is incredibly complex, and the truth is we're not managing any of the factors that have to do with the ecosystem, we're just managing people. So if you want to think about maintaining something, what we're trying to maintain is the maximum level of human disturbance. So I think thinking about maintenance is fine, but not thinking about maintaining factors in the environment as much as maintaining human behavior at some acceptable level.
The other way around. Goal 3, objective 2, which may be fine, but I'm not sure if the broader concept is incorporated in here. This section is to improve recreational, educational, and study opportunities. And this objective 2 focuses on replicating state marine reserves as reference areas. Now, for example, if you wanted to, say, distinguish the relative influences of recreational and commercial fishing or particular gear types, that would not allow you to do so. because you would need to incorporate other MPAs, not marine reserves, strict no-take marine reserves, but other MPAs that regulate particular activities, which would allow you to make those comparisons. Those other MPAs would have to be replicated as well to make those comparisons. Right. So I don't know.
And that's this one was also discussed yesterday at some length, and in fact, beyond that, you need to replicate the non-MPA areas and similar habitats as well if you're going to actually make the comparison. We kind of struggled yesterday with how do you say that without making it sound like you need, you know, 20 of everything. One possibility is looking at the proposed editorial revision there. You might say similar types of marine habitats and communities shall be replicated in multiple MPAs and just, you know, leave it at that. You're never going to have the perfect scientific design, obviously. And then there was another discussion about, you know, sort of pure reference sites for the impacts of fishing as a whole. You would want to have reserves, but this other question of examining the difference in what does a park give you versus a reserve versus a conservation area, you kind of need all of them. So
I can quickly respond to that. It's not to say that we're recommending or advocating the use of MPAs in that way, but what the SAT should say is that if the regional stakeholder group thinks that the use of MPAs for that purpose is appropriate, then that's something that you need to take into consideration.
Okay.
I have a couple general comments that I think we're going to need to consider. One is how we determine what the key species are that we'll be measuring. And I don't know if you guys are looking for the SAT to actually produce a list of key species that will be indicators for these measurements. Mm-hmm. And then along those lines, I think it needs to be emphasized that, you know, that there are going to be shifts in trophic cascades that will lead to the decrease in abundance of certain species, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, and that needs to be at least clear, I think, in some of these objectives, that downward trends are representative of natural, or in quotes, natural
right.
shifts.
And I do think that's why talking about differential change as opposed to necessarily increase or decrease
right.
is a good way to phrase it, because you're absolutely right. Some things would be expected to decrease, and you might want to see that. With regard to the species, I think when we talk today about the species likely to benefit list, for each region, as you pull out those key or critical species, those sort of jump to the top as potential indicators of what the MPAs are doing.
And again, so then I think when that list was generated, when you say benefit, people think in terms of increase in abundance.
Mm-hmm.
And so we may have key species that are not on that list at all.
Sure.
That are not going to benefit in the way that we've developed that list.
Right. Right. So, yeah, we may need, when we're picking indicator species, you may need to go beyond that list of key or critical
right.
species and pull some others as well.
Another comment that I have is with regard to measurements of the functioning of the system as a network. And I don't have an answer to this, but maybe there are some people that do, how we're going to actually monitor and develop indicators to show that this is functioning from an ecological standpoint as a network. I know there's management of a network, and we can managing it as a system, but how do we empirically demonstrate that we're seeing a network functioning, and that in terms of larval transport, I think that's a big issue that we'll have to address.
Mm-hmm. Ken? Ken and Astrid, then Astrid can go first. Okay.
Thanks. I had a couple of observations, I guess. And I don't have any answers to any of them, just more questions. How do you... first of all, I want to comment on something Mike DeLapa said a while ago, and I completely agree with the sentiment that we want to be consistent or between what how the SAT goes about evaluating MPAs and what's used in the Central Coast. However, I noticed that in your statement, Mike, you used three different formulations. One was to be on the same page, to be consistent with, and or to use the same. And I would suggest that at some point we will have to come to some determination which it's going to be. Because if we end up using exactly the same evaluation criteria in the Central Coast, then by extension, we are allowing the Central Coast study region to drive the entire state, which is one way to go. begs the question why we have a Central Coast study region. So it's not trivial, and I don't mean to sound flip or anything. I think it's actually it's an interesting conundrum we may find ourselves in, that we will have to not just use with, you know, not just base our evaluation as the SAT on what the relative to what the Central Coast regional stakeholder group comes up with, but also develop a set of criteria that help us relate the Central Coast to the rest of the state and to some of these issues of connectivity and what have you. I also had a question sort of along the lines of what Dean just raised with regard to the question of how MPAs work as a network. I have difficulties even making the connection from the how an, my understanding is that every individual MPA has to have a set of goals and objectives, as well as presumably an alternative that may be made up of a number of them, including different kinds of MPAs. And I'm somewhat perplexed by the prospect of evaluating how a suite of MPAs of different sort of spatial designations act together in an alternative. And then, of course, how do you scale up from an alternative in a region to a whole network? And I think this is something that, I mean, it's going to drive us crazy, but it's also something I think we need to highlight to the Central Coast stakeholder group, that, that there are these additional complexities that in terms of our evaluation task and their design task translates into increase in the number of dimensions of the problem.
And I think that this is an ongoing discussion regarding networks and one that we did want to key up today again regarding networks. We don't have the time today to fully vet it, obviously, or perhaps in our lives, but you're right. And the idea of how do you the final question, as it were, as to is this functioning as a network is going to be a tough one. And that's something I think we're going to talk a little bit about later today.
Yes, but I'm going to talk a little bit about one way of getting a conversation started, but it's very complex.
Yeah. So let's hold that one in the queue. And then we had, I don't know, Linwood then Ken or Ken then Linwood? I forgot. I'm going to do Ken first.
Okay. When I kind of read through this spreadsheet, my context when I looked at it was I'm going to be getting a proposal for some MPAs, and I started kind of reading through these, trying to judge, you know, how would I use these to judge. There were some, I kind of have comments at different levels, and I'll tackle one and then come back and do the others. There was the first thing of, did we have all the goals there, or the goals that were there were the right? And for the most part, it looks pretty good. I mean, they came right out of the act, right? So how bad could they be?
So
a rhetorical question.
Yes. And then I looked at the objectives, and for the most part, they were okay. I think what concerned me about the objectives is that as a scientific, not all of them were scientific. There are a lot of them that were probably beyond the scope of this group, and so we might want to talk about which ones we actually want to pay attention mm-hmm. to and which ones we don't. And then the third thing was, on those ones that seem appropriate for us to evaluate, you guys took a good stab at you know, things to measure, but in some cases they were quantitative enough where I could probably look at them and start making judgments between different proposals, mm-hmm. but a lot of them probably weren't quantitative enough. So I'll just give you an example. And we started talking about goal number 3. And so I'll just run you through some of the notes I wrote in my margin mm-hmm. as we went through the different objectives for goal 3. So for the first objective, talks about, you know, distances. And so I had questions like, well, is it just straight distance? What if we have multiple MPAs? These, is it average distance or maximum distance or range of distances? Do we have range cutoffs, maybe? That's a good way to do it. So maybe people are willing, maybe this is a question for Linwood and Astrid, you know, how far are people willing to drive? You know, so those are the types of quantitative type measures I think would make it easier for not only for us to evaluate, but for the Central Coast group to, you know, kind of figure out which proposals are going to work out best for them. The second objective, where it talks about replication, I mean, you have list habitats that are replicated, but we don't really, you know, is 2 the right number? 3 is more better? So, you know, we might have like a minimum criteria mm-hmm. for replication. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that number is, but we might want, that's going to help us evaluate, and it's going to help the Central Coast and by extension to the rest of the state. Let me see. On objective 3, scientific monitoring, I guess, you know, I think this is an extremely valuable one. Is it just the total number? I mean, what if you've got 12 really small ones versus one that's got, you know, 2 really big ones, you know? Do we weight by, you know, the size of that program or by the number of students in it? Or, I mean, those would be the things that I would want to pay attention to. I'm sure there's others. So mm-hmm. How about objective 4, where it says protect or enhance the recreational experience? This is one where actually, Linwood already started touching on it, and I would probably rephrase it more towards the recreational uses. And for number 5, this one was going to be difficult, I thought. I didn't know whether this group really wanted to deal with the outreach. Is that something we need to deal with as technical folks?
No.
So,
unless you had some interest in it, but no,
I wouldn't know how to judge it.
And frankly, the objective 5 is one of those ones. All we could do right now is say what's happening, then that's about it.
Right, and then improvement, of course, is all relative.
Right.
It just kind of it reemphasizes to me the reason I'm kind of bringing up these specific examples is because ultimately we're going to get proposals in front of our group. And I'd like to see us kind of evaluating it in a coherent way. So, if we can pick off even just a few of these, because mm-hmm. I'm sure every regional group is going to have this starting list at least. And if we can pick off just a few of these, that'll help the process. That'll help the regional groups figure out what they need to focus on for creating good, cohesive proposals. Mm-hmm. I think it'll be good for us not only to evaluate them and make recommendations. I think it'll help the Blue Ribbon Task Force as well.
Okay. So, yeah, and I think you'll notice that if you read through our how measured column, some of them, frankly, we have question mark. We don't even know how you would measure it.
I actually have that in a few of them. Those may be ones that we just don't prioritize.
Right. We perhaps it's not a science team question. And then if you look at the ones where we did suggest a way to measure it, I think you'll come up with an abbreviated list of these objectives that the science team may use particularly in their evaluation or their helping to develop a evaluation criteria.
So I'm not sure how you want to, I mean, what you asked us for was to give you kind of feedback on how to, so I'm kind of
That's good, and I think so far what I've been doing is collecting sort of all of what you're saying in hopes that I can relay it to the stakeholder group, and Mark will be there, and Dean and Ed, are you going to be there this coming one?
Actually, yeah, I'll be there on the
7th. Yeah, so Dean and Mark will be there to help us provide that input back to the group, and maybe they'll come back with a little bit revised list.
So that's how you'd like to leave it this time, is basically have us just give a little bit of feedback.
Yeah, no, I don't expect any sort of closure or decisions on this today in any way, and we only have about 10 more minutes to work on this particular item. But I also think when we start talking about evaluation in the next topic, some of this is going to come right back up again, and we'll further vet it.
Okay, well, then I'm going to throw out a few if you just want kind of genres of things that the Central mm-hmm. Coast Group should consider. We have virtually no measurement endpoints in here that are based on modeling outcomes, but we've had a lot of discussion around this group about the use of models, and I think it'd be a crying shame if that's not in there somewhere. The other thing that I know you guys have asked me to make a comment on to prepare a presentation for our next meeting is on water quality, and I saw virtually no objectives based on water quality. And so that would be one that I would suggest the Central Coast Group ought to pay attention to.
Now, with regards to that, quickly, given that MPAs adopted by this program won't change water quality, what type of water quality objective would you want to see with regards to how MPAs might change?
You've kind of created these new categories of what do you call them,
design
considerations
criteria,
or implementation
considerations.
Right. Uh-huh. You may want to shovel it off to that.
That's a great suggestion.
So now my question to you is the scientific advisory team going to evaluate implementation plans or design considerations as part of our review and recommendation process on proposals?
Yeah, sure.
I think
the product that we expect to be developed by the Central Coast Group is going to be a list of goals, objectives, and design and implementation criteria. So you will certainly look that over. And again, as you're developing your evaluation plan or evaluation strategy, you'll probably be taking a lot of that into account.
So maybe I'll save that type of discussion for our next agenda or later agenda.
Well, I think one thing I will note to the team, and maybe again, now I've got a conversation with Linwood and maybe a conversation with you in the break about for design considerations for water quality, what might they be? Because I think if we suggest that to the Central Coast Group at their next meeting, they'll be very amenable to including a design consideration on water quality, because that is a big issue with them.
Right. So, yeah. And all right. Then to kind of deal with Astrid's concern about the Central Coast Group kind of driving what the state's going to do, I think if the science team can kind of pick up on these particular objectives that are important and measurable to us, at least, then, you know, they'll have their specific needs, but if we can pick on the few that'll extrapolate statewide, that'll be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Linwood.
Little picture first. Water quality is one of the attributes that I would have thought of that should go under Goal 3. That's where it should fit. It's one, you know, improve water quality, improve recreational opportunities.
Yeah, I guess, again, being careful about the objective, the way I've been guiding stakeholders to think about objectives is, you know, what will an MPA do to meet that objective? So if the objective is improve water quality in order to lead to an improved recreational experience,
then MPAs would not be the appropriate answer.
No, but the placement of MPAs, you may place an MPA in a place that has bad water quality, or you may place an MPA for recreational purposes in a place that has good water quality. So while it doesn't, you know, the MPA itself doesn't affect water quality, that's an attribute that should be considered when thinking about where to place it.
So design consideration.
So it's a design consideration.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So, but big picture, I want to reframe the discussion a little bit by going back to networks. And when we keep talking about networks, we keep talking about larval transport as if that's the only thing to consider. But, and I wasn't there when the MLPA was framed, but when I think of networks, I think one of the reasons for having networks is really for having a portfolio. So you can think of all these non-biological attributes and factors, these goals you want to achieve, and you want to make sure in the end when you have these 5, 10, 3 MPAs that you get all of the goals rather than having the same kind of criteria like Astrid was describing for every MPA where every MPA looks like a different cookie cutter. You don't want that. And so thinking about that and thinking about these criteria, a lot of Ken's questions sort of reflected, I think, an understanding that these are the kind of criteria that may or could go into a model, and so they should be scientifically rigorous. But for me, these are basically descriptive criteria, and some of them are going to be more based in science than others, but the important thing is that they're objective, and we may have multiple ways of measuring the same criteria, so we should go into that wide open and think of there are three ways of measuring distance. You know, when there are centers of gravity where you weight the population by the distance. So we don't need just one, and they can be fuzzy as long as we all agree on them. Then we come up with all of these descriptors, and you look at all of these different MPAs, and it isn't going to be true that every MPA needs to do a good job on each of these goals and objectives. We just need to make sure that for the coast, we have a good coverage of these goals and objectives. So I don't.
So that, yeah, that's one attribute of the network. Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry so much about some of these not having scientific measures, because what we're really trying to do is describe these existing MPAs and perhaps the designed MPAs that come out of this in a way that we can all agree on. But there's a difference between the descriptive and then the analytical.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with that. And again, though, with regards to how the science advisory team will use them, if there are very subjective objectives, it's unlikely that you will provide direct input on it.
No, well, there's a difference between the way the science advisory team will use them and the way the science advisory team can advise you in collecting data to measure these. Mm-hmm. And so I've been looking at it at that perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, these are the goals. What kind of information can you get from the SAT that'll help you go out and collect data about these?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a difference in the context of how we read. I agree, there's lots of different data you could use. I think we need to agree on when we get to the point of evaluating, there's got to be at least one thing that we can all agree on quantitatively we're going to evaluate on. Now, whether it's additional lines of evidence that we should pay attention to or might be part of the weighting for how we evaluate it, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah. No, and I think, again, I think some of the objectives that the Central Coast Group will adopt are going to be based on just personal opinion as far as has something met it. And that's something that I would not want the science team to weigh in on. And you can provide data as essentially, for instance, this, the Goal 3 Objective 1 is a good example. Our staff recommendation was, all right, we can provide you with how far each MPA is from a population center. It's a judgment call in some respects, though Linwood's correct that there are ways to measure how far people are willing to drive. But in some respects, it's a judgment call. Is that close? You know, we don't have a measure of what close is. And therefore, we can provide the data. The Central Coast stakeholder group may have to determine, is that acceptable to us as a group?
And so let's use that one for an example. If we can set some kind of, I don't want to use the word threshold, I'll just say categories, that they can then use as a standard evaluation. But let's face it, these are proposals. Mm-hmm. And it's up to the Central Coast stakeholders that are advocating a proposal to try and sell us that, here's what basically you needed, but here's a population weighting, which makes my proposal better than somebody else's. So we need kind of a standard thing to evaluate on
and then, you know, add more information to help weight that proposal, to make their pitch, essentially, of why mine's better than somebody else's. So that's just my, you know.
Okay, let's jump to Astrid, and then Mike, and then Rec, and then we're done.
Thanks. Something Ken said earlier actually made me think of a contribution I'm not best qualified or even imperfectly qualified to make, but I'll try anyway as one of the social scientists on this team. And this pertains to Goal 3, Objective 5, public outreach, which Ken wasn't comfortable commenting on, but I am. If only to say that what I don't see reflected in any of these goals and objectives is any kind of reference to the changing demographics in California. And you might imagine, and there are many ways to assess the efficacy of outreach programs. If they're all English language, you're missing the boat, quite literally. We know, at least anecdotally, that there are differential uses by different ethnic groups, both in commercial fisheries as well, I presume, in recreational activities. And so we might, or certainly the Central Coast stakeholders may want to consider this, because there are whether it's multilingual outreach or outreach in languages that reflect the diversity and sort of the changing pie, if you will, the changing landscape in California, that's one way to think about it. But I would certainly encourage them to do that.
Okay, Mike, then Rick, then Dean.
So both Dean and Ken brought up a point that I think is important to think about moving forward, which is sort of the limits of science and where are those limits clearly delineated in terms of if you can't measure, if there isn't data that can be collected to actually measure something, really being clear with stakeholders and yourselves and, you know, having that up front that those are things that need to, you know, we need to understand that because we don't want to be writing objectives that can't be measured from a scientific standpoint. Clearly, some of these are there'll have to be judgments, but in some cases where we've expected that there's going to be a scientific measure or a way to monitor it, and if that assumption is wrong, we should know about it up front. The point about Ken raised a point about it would be a shame if we didn't have modeling endpoints here. I'm unclear what that means. Maybe you could just help me understand that, Ken.
I'd refer that question to some of the folks that are planning on doing the modeling.
I think essentially he's coming back to the same issue of how do you measure this and what do you expect to happen, and if the goal is the objective is crafted in a way that provides you the ability to model to see if you're going to see if you might meet it, then that's a helpful thing. So I think that's more discussion than we can have right.
Right. It's and again to the point of making sure that whatever the models that are being used are relevant to these criteria, and if there's other statewide criteria, I guess we should probably put those on the table and know what they are. Because what we've tried to do here is take a combination of the design considerations that came out of the master plan framework, the specific goals in the act, and refine those goals in more measurable ways with objectives. So if the SAT believes that there are things that we're missing that they would need to evaluate in terms of statewide importance, we ought to know what those things are, and the stakeholders ought to be aware of them. So, I just think, again, making sure that the subset of these objectives that the science team believes are measurable and scientifically appropriate to measure are all here, and that there isn't something that we're somehow missing that the stakeholders should know about.
Okay, Rick?
Yeah, I think my comment is somewhat related to that. Is sort of implicit here is that we're stating objectives and parameters to measure to assess whether or not those objectives are being met. And for instance, the size distribution of a critter. But there are a lot of other variables that may be affecting that particular parameter. And so if we go out and measure fish size, say a sheephead, and it's going up, we might say, oh, this is really good, or if it's going down, we might say that's really bad. But there could be other environmental factors at play here. And so I guess my recommendation is the SAT team also needs to specify what are the other possible environmental forcing factors that need to be monitored to assess whether or not the change you're seeing is due to the MPA being put there or it's from some other factor out there. And I realize this could get in kind of a laundry list, but I think it's really important that you A, point out that there are other factors, and B, identify those as whether or not you're going to be able to effectively, cost-effectively measure them. Because if you can't, then you're going to be faced with a situation of saying, yes, we saw this change, but really have no idea why, and we can't relate it to the MPA. So, and the SAT team is the perfect body to say, okay, if this is the objective, here's a good measurable parameter. Here are the other possible environmental factors or human factors that could be responsible for that. Let's at least get those on the table. So when we finally move forward to design a monitoring program, you've got that framework to work with.
I'm gonna cut you off, Mary. That's all right, unless it's burning. Okay, well, probably isn't the same thing I'm going to say, but I've got three assignments to wrap this up, and these are lunchtime assignments, so they get done and over with. Mark is going to look at Goal 3, Objective 2, and try and come up with a better way of saying that to be a little more inclusive of other options for replication. Linwood is going to look at Goal 3, Objective 4, and try and come up with something to help reframe that to be more specific towards improving the recreational experience with some possible merits of how you look at that. And Ken is going to draw up a proposed water quality design criteria. Okay? And hey, you got an hour during lunch to do it, so I'm sure you can come up with something great. And then I guess Mary is now definitely needing to speak.
Thanks. I'll make it quick. I just wanted to say Goal 1, Objective 5 was one that we had also really struggled with measurability, and I don't know if we want to ask somebody to take a look at that one over lunch.
Oh,
it's about ecosystem structure function.
That one we had no clue about. So, Linwood, your card went up.
And I think, I had a comment on Goal 3, Objective 2, that if we agree, then it may give Mark more flexibility. It seemed to me that all the other objectives under Goal 3 are about how you manage MPAs to improve the human experience, while Objective 2 was really about how do you set up these replicates in order to measure the impact of humans. It shouldn't be in there. This one of these things is not
the,
like the other.
The reason it's there and the reason it needs to be revised is that it's the improving the study abilities. And so one of the comments about existing MPAs is that you don't have replicated areas and similar habitats or the ability to study. So it's the educational and study opportunities part of it.
Yeah, I just thought that was covered under one a little bit, I guess. I mean, I see there are lots of things you can do to improve study opportunities, but then that replicate, the idea of having replicates has a twofold use. One is maybe it makes it easier to do studies, but it also is really going to be important for monitoring, right, and the kinds of monitoring that Rick was talking about too. So to that degree, what's good for the scientist may not be the thing that's the best for the blue-collar kind of monitoring.
Right. I just say that the stakeholders want this in there under this goal,
okay.
So I'd rather have a revision from the science team to make it usable as opposed to we don't think it fits there.
Can you change the ordering?
I don't think the order matters.
Okay. Well, if you did change it, then you would put it at the end. It would kind of make sense. These are the things you do to improve human experiences. And lastly, this is how you tell, right? Or
well, no, but again, it's improving study opportunities. We can talk offline a little bit about it. It's not about necessarily improving study, which the first one does address in part. Okay, so with regards to Mary's comment, maybe if everybody can think about that one, it's a tough one, and I don't know if it's going to end up being something that we can measure or not.
But I think some comment from the SAT about whether it's measurable or not would help the stakeholders. If it's not measurable, they should know that.
Okay. So if everybody can think about objective five during lunch, and then we'll come back at the end of the day today and see if there's any sort of decision about that. We're gonna move on.
All right, we're shifting gears and introducing the next major topic, the MPA evaluation, which will be driven by the goals and objectives. And John's going to lead that off. And we'll do this up to lunch, and then we'll come back to it after lunch.
Thank you. And actually, the preceding conversation was very, very helpful in framing what's going to follow, because, as you saw, you bled into or leapt into or fully involved in evaluation issues. And also, I would observe that one of the questions about networks is there an ecosystem perspective on network, and that speaks directly to the possible measurability or inability to measure goal one, objective five. And I don't want to talk about networks first, but it's one of the things I'd like to talk about later. What I'd like to do is start with sort of a setting of the context of what we're going to do about evaluation. And it struck me that one of the first things to reiterate is something that we sometimes lose sight of, at least in the way in which we talk about the whole effort. The product of the entire Marine Life Protected Act initiative, I summarize in terms of the Central Coast Project, is in the following way. It's the identification and the valuing of alternative MPAs for consideration by the Bruderman Task Force, which then convey them to the Department of Fish and Game and thence to the Fish and Game Commission for their statutory rulemaking decisions. It's important that the process does not have to yield a single proposal. Indeed, it is charged with delivering multiple proposals. It is not expected to result in ranked proposals, does not have to result in ranked proposals. So you don't have to get out of the Central Coast Project nor out of the advice of the Science Advisory Team an absolute ranking of proposals. What we need to do is clearly understand the proposals and, to the best of our ability, clearly value those in terms of their scientific impacts, et cetera. It does make the task somewhat easier. And I think my expectation is that a limited number of proposals will come out of this, and there will be quite a bit of consensus about the valuation that is the expected impacts, but there need not even be full closure on that. But that's helpful in understanding. I'd like first, and we sent around just a couple of things preparatory to this meeting, and the first thing I'd like to have and I'm sorry I didn't queue these up, Carrie, if you could do that one-page thing, and I actually have hard copies of it also to send around, because I'd like to just talk about the timing of what we're doing and emphasize that. Linwood, if you could send those this way. This was the thing that you sent out just yesterday. All I wanted to talk about on this was to break our work into three distinct time periods. And one we're engaged in today and in the September meeting, and that's the development of evaluation criteria and make whatever progress we can on the evaluation of existing MPAs. The second time period, and these overlap in some sense, but we really don't get packages of new MPAs until the October meeting, probably. But we're going to have packages of possible new MPAs, and those include modifications of existing MPAs and networks of MPAs. And that actually, the heavy lifting on that actually doesn't extend into February. It ends in December. So I should rephrase this, and it's really a September, October, November, December, and it's mostly October, November, December, and that's the time frame. Then we have, and it'll continue a little bit into January, February, when these are being discussed with the Bruderman Task Force, And there will be additional interactions at that stage, probably. But the next thing that happens is really building on the lessons of this work and preparing the state and our successor actors and institutions in this for the continued implementation of the Marine Life Protection Act and the balance of California coast through 2011. And so I want to make that a separate sort of distinct phase. The next thing I'd like to turn to, if you could, Carrie, is not a handout that I have, but that the Excel spreadsheet I gave you today. One of the things the SAT asked of and charged John Ugretz and I with doing was preparing a flowchart of the interactions, which we failed to do. And I tried to start working on something that is hard to read at this scale, and I apologize for that, and we'll provide a better version of it and maybe even a flowcharted version of it. And I was informed in this by some earlier efforts that Mike DeLappa had undertaken and others, but I tried to bring it up to date a little more and to focus particularly on the interaction between the SAT and the Central Coast Project. And actually, if you could just scroll down to the work elements of the Central Coast, starting at row 7 there. I've divided those in, just go up just a little bit now there, that set. The work elements that the Central Coast is doing is a regional profile, which you've seen already, and review the goals and provisional objectives, which you saw today, the evaluation criteria, which are going to come out of that largely we're going to see. Then we're going to have to evaluate existing MPAs, and then there's going to be a package of alternative MPAs to assess. And lastly, there's a management plan, including enforcement, monitoring, and evaluation. All of that work is going to be ping-ponging back and forth between the Central Coast Regional Stakeholder Group, the SAT subteam, which deals with questions specifically, the full SAT, the full science advisory team, and the Blue Ribbon Task Force, and staff is going to try to make that as seamless and as effective and beautiful as possible, and we guarantee we will stub our toes occasionally. But it's a pretty substantial role. If you go up now to the top where the SAT roles are, what I've tried to lay out here by month are the major activities. And we're in our August meeting, and the regional profile is behind us, really. We haven't talked about it at all today. We have the draft evaluation criteria is this matrix. I need to get consistent language in here. We're going to talk later today about the possibility of additional research and the need for evaluation tools for the work to support this group. It's sort of I'm going to ask Astrid in a few minutes to talk a little bit from a draft that she's prepared of this, but it's sort of the end of the day conversation today. You'll see also there is the SAT regional group that will refine how it's working. It's playing a very critical role, and I think I'm very comfortable with at least what we have in place and how it's working. We can talk a little bit more about that. What I don't have in here is another major activity you're doing, which is developing presentations, because it didn't relate particularly to the Central Coast Regional Stakeholder Group, which is misspelled throughout here. We have three C's instead of two. In September, some of the major work before this group will be whatever we do to finalize the regional profile. If you go over to C3 as an example, and we're revising and extending the evaluation criteria, we're going to decide at that meeting, in the way I think about this, if we need additional research and tools for evaluation. I don't anticipate making a decision on that today, but queuing that up for consideration in September. In October, on your work schedule, you were intended to complete your presentations on science and have them ready to go to the Blue Ribbon Task Force. This is the first opportunity that we will have to review possible new MPAs and changes in MPAs out of the Central Coast Regional Stakeholder Group. And we are thinking through how to handle that in a stakeholder group. One way to do it is to invite a process of effectively brainstorming, develop an inventory of possible sites. At this stage, nothing gets knocked off the table, and then the staff can begin to assemble information on those. Because of that information, it's hard to imagine in even a two-day meeting you really make judgments. But that'll be coming, hopefully, to the science advisory team in October. In November, then there would be the first evaluation of those packages. So this would be the first time that the SAT would be looking at these and saying, based on the information we have as assembled, here we can make some judgments about these, and we have to sort out what can be done in the full SAT, what can be done in work teams. There's a bunch of operational questions to deal with yet. And in December, we'd be coming to a second evaluation. I truncated the work flow at this point. The Central Coast Regional Stakeholder Group is anticipated to have no meetings after December. And we've got to figure out what the sequence of work will be at that point, and I'm anticipating that there may still be some refinement of adding in additional information about packages after that period. But the main point here is that if we think about the work for evaluation that is in front of the SAT, it includes the existing MPAs, which we will queue up for you in the next couple meetings, and then the possibility of packages, and the heavy lifting will be in November and December. I hope that's correct, and I hope we're able to meet that schedule. So that's the preparatory for the discussion of the evaluation task in terms of what the objective is. Remember, it's the identification and the valuing. We just need to make certain they're honestly they're understood, and we present the information as accurately as possible. And the time schedule on which we're anticipating this project rolling out. Astrid, would you like to talk a little bit about the memo you shared? And I also have hard copies of that, which fits into this. And it raises the question of not only evaluation criteria, which we're talking about developing off of the matrix and the design considerations and the goals and objectives and the guidance that's in the Act, but then how that comes before the SAT, and then is there a need for additional sorts of tools? And as I suggested in my earlier comments, I don't anticipate a decision on that today, but rather a beginning conversation, not at this point, but I just wanted to get the question in your head, but toward the end of our session after lunch, and then, but if you could cue this up a little bit.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, John. So what you're looking at here is just a three-page memo that was circulated just before the meeting the other day, and it's just broken this up into four distinct sections, really. The first of which is just a recap of how we got to where we are. This is in response to a discussion, not the last meeting, but the previous meeting, where I think some people, I'm losing track of meetings, so it's useful to remind myself, apparently, of how we of where we had arrived at, and this is just a recap. I don't know that I need to read this out. If people had questions on this section, it might be worth going through them. If not, I'll just go through the document. Essentially, the upshot is that we had convened an evaluation committee in July, a subcommittee to begin thinking about the task at hand of evaluating these proposed packages, proposal packages rather, that are coming our way, and sort of to step back and say, okay, do we have everything we need to do this task? And the upshot over our initial meeting there was that no, we can see some three major needs, and the expediencies of the MLPA process having to do with you know, identifying and queuing up funding, as it were, to get these things done, then directed basically that we at least develop a draft proposal just so we have a placeholder for these activities. And I want to again emphasize that this is not some sort of, you know, the scientist's equivalent of an allocation grab. It is rather a placeholder proposal to do just that, to keep, you know, to identify these sort of logistical and analytical needs, at least tentatively. The first of which is on-demand GIS capacity to help us literally look at these alternatives. And I was pleased to learn that the department has identified some resources. And it's, you know, it's either that or we're all looking at our GIS products on our laptops. The second was identify a way to assess the network characteristics of proposed alternatives, both within the Central Coast region and with regard to their function in the eventual statewide network. Again, we've discussed this over and over, and you know, the point is that at some point, presumably, we will have to figure out how to do it. And this is just a recognition that that is a need to figure out how we will evaluate the network characteristics. There are several ideas out there, Lou Botsford's work being one of them, but clearly this is not meant to forestall the discussion. It's meant to identify that as an action item for the SAT. And bear in mind that a lot of this happened as we were sort of in the midst of editing presentations and sort of writing guidelines. And so we, you know, this was the evaluation committee basically stepped up to the plate and said, well, let's look a little further down the road and see what some of the needs are that are coming our way. And finally, the last item, the last identified need is a way to assess what will likely be multiple and potentially conflicting goals and objectives across different alternatives, across different packages. And a question, you know, the question being how the SAT sort of intelligently comments on these alternatives. Again, not trivial, and we thought it would be good to at least start thinking about that. And coming out of that was the straw dog proposal that would help identify some resources. And I don't want to focus on that. I gather from John that those resources are now identified, should we wish to proceed, whether it's with the original straw dog proposal or something else. But I would like to do is move on to the second piece, the second section of this discussion paper, which is the evaluation task at hand. And this is sort of stepping back from the concrete matrix and the details, if you will, of concrete goals and objectives, and sort of reflecting on what this task looks like, what it feels like. And this is just something I put up based on, I tried to draft based on the two meetings that we did have in the interim as a basis for discussion. And you can read them up there. But in general, again, recognizing that we have not yet formed our evaluation strategy, I would surmise that it is reasonable to expect that this task will have these five sort of dimensions to it. One is there will be multiple objectives to consider for each alternative, for each proposal package. And if you cast your mind back to the matrix, 75 lines, potentially, you're looking at 75 goals and objectives and the metrics associated with them. And an alternative, even if it only even if all we did was propose, if the Central Coast stakeholder group proposed a single MPA for the Central Coast, there would be 75 pieces of information to evaluate on that design. But it'll likely be many more dimensions of it. Not only that, but it's to the extent that we have multiple alternatives that are being promoted, and John is actually, both Johns have been very optimistic in saying we expect a small number, and I guess we will see. Ideally, it's a small number, but now multiply that number by different, not just by that slew of objectives and goals and the measurables associated with them, but then the different weight that is placed on different objectives or different, and then in a third point, different mixtures of the three, or I guess four, if you count the sort of no protection alternative as a viable alternative, the four different spatial flavors of marine protected areas. Then the fourth dimension that we identified in discussion is that, for better or for worse, the SAT will be looked to provide the scientific standard against which to evaluate these different MPA alternatives that are proposed. And it sort of begs the question, what is our standard going to be in the absence of existing, not in the absence of existing MPAs, but in the absence of a huge body of work on how MPAs perform in the Central Coast in particular, we will have to come up with some other internal standard of sorts against which we seek to measure and ultimately to monitor, I suppose, the performance of the proposed MPAs as well as their relative merit against each other. And our conclusion might be to say, well, all we can say is that, you know, option A has more of one objective than option B. But again, this is sort of an open item for discussion, I think. And the final dimension that we identified is that there is a chance, of course, that we will be looked to provide additional information on particular proposals, based on the geodatabase and on the available information resources. So one likely scenario, I guess, is, and again, it remains to be seen how it actually unfolds, is that the Central Coast stakeholders would turn to the SAT for recommendations on how to achieve a particular set of goals and objectives, in addition to, drawing up particular alternatives. And so those, I think, are useful categories for framing our discussion of how we might want to approach our evaluation task. This issue of tools came up, and that's the third item in this discussion paper. And it's sort of the bird's eye perspective of this task. You know, given that we're dealing with an unknown number of alternatives and as yet undetermined number of objectives against which to assess them, and given what we know about the IMSG tool in its current form, and I understand Mary can give us a bit more of a guide to that tool, the question arose, well, how does this MPA process in California, looking globally at other MPA processes, how would we want to proceed with how we judge these things against them? I personally now would not be comfortable just looking at a slew of alternatives saying, well, ultimately I just think this one is better than that one. I'd like to have some, however imperfect, internal yardstick against which one would basically run alternatives and say, well, compared to this yardstick, you know, option A performs in this way and option B performs in a different way, and it's up to you, the stakeholders and the policymakers, to pick one. We had very brief, only too brief a discussion about this in July, but one question was, well, hey, wait a minute, how did you guys come up with this notion that you need new tools? The short answer is that given the sorts of dimensions of the evaluation task that we identified, at least preliminarily for our purposes here, have also been faced elsewhere in the world. And elsewhere in the world, the sort of gold standard, if you will, that has emerged, the sort of best available science, is to at least use spatial modeling tools in some capacity to assist these determinations. And I think Sati Arame can speak to the way they've been used in the Channel Islands, for example, closest to home. But there's a variety of applications for computer-based simulations to help assess the performance of different alternatives against a set of objectives. That's not, again, it's not to forestall the discussion on this. It's just, the short answer is we did a quick review of the scientific literature and the review of these various tools out there. And some of these reviews of existing tools are referenced in the discussion document by way of, supporting our initial conclusion that it might be helpful, given the complexity of the task, the evaluation task here, to look into those tools as well and identify resources for the development as needed.
I think that's helpful in queuing up the conversation, and we can return to the question about possible tools as we get deeper into the evaluation.
John, if I may, I know we're eager to get into lunch. The final task for this discussion straw doc that we had been given in the interim, in the offline discussions, was to sort of highlight, well, how does this relate to what's going on elsewhere? And that's this very primitive diagram of how what we do relates to what the Central Coast does and is using by way of tools and the sort of underlying information database. And the nutshell is that they're obviously complementary.
Yeah. Thank you. And Astrid is further into flowcharting than I am, clearly. I wanted to make two other points before I go to lunch. One is, when we come back from lunch, we will learn more about both what we have intended as a process and also the tool that is being developed for the use by the Central Coast Regional Stakeholder Group, the IMSG tool, which was in process, and the working group on evaluation actually started their task without understanding what that other tool was, and have gained some understanding of it also. It is a different tool than it's talked about in this also. And I'm going to ask Sati when you come back to talk just a little bit about Channel Islands. The other thing I wanted to mention before we go, though, is the question about contracts with SAP members, which has been raised, and just frame that. There are three sets of contracts that have been funded with initiative funds to date with SAP members, and I think this is in descending order of size. One is to support the data management organization and presentation, and it built on an existing contract with UC Santa Barbara. And that contract is paid for equipment and data management, effectively. The second contract has been with EcoTrust. Astrid has played a role in that, but mostly her colleagues. And that has been to increase the resolution of spatial information on fishing effort and take it down to micro blocks of one nautical mile. And that process is nearing completion. The contract is to end in September, and it will be very beneficial in providing increased information about fishing effort and help fill a hole in socioeconomic data. The third contract that has been entered into began first with not a contract directly with MLPA funds, but rather with Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary funds to support Chris LaFranchi in doing targeted interviews with non-consumptive uses, and Linwood Pendleton was working with Chris and helped support that. And subsequently, I've entered into a contract with Linwood with initiative funds to do literature search on selected forms of non-consumptive uses. Those have been, in my judgment, good contracts entered in to fill holes in the data that we had, and I'm comfortable with the work that is being done in all those cases. I do want to recognize the issue, though, of entering into contracts with SAP members. We've talked extensively with counsel in the Department of Fish and Game. This is not an issue of legal conflicts of interest. There are no conflicts of interest here that meet the legal test. First of all, they're not state funds. Secondly, many of you are not state employees. Beyond that, of course, I should note that there's a tremendous amount of transparency in this process. All of our proceedings are being videotaped. All of the products are made visible to on the web and in the meetings, et cetera. So we're really working hard to be transparent in this. And the eventual work goes through peer review. But I don't want to create unnecessary concern about perceptions of conflict of interest. So what I would like to do, and this is in the spirit of the guidelines being a living document, is have a conversation, perhaps offline, about how this group would like to handle issues of contracts with SAP members as they go forward. And there are a couple of options, and I'd be open to your thoughts about what those, about the most effective options. And I've heard people talk about experiences they've had in UC internal allocation processes where many times people getting funds are on the group and step out of the room or whatever, but we need a conversation about that. And so as we finish today, I'd like to make certain we get that assigned to a group and that we have closure on it and we're all comfortable with it, because I don't want any level of discomfort. So if we could put that on the calendar to get the agenda to get dealt with by the end of the day, that'd be great. That's as far as I'd hope to get before lunch. After lunch, we're going to come back and dig into this in some more depth.
So come back at 1 o'clock, and people will be around. It's not going to be locked, but people will be around. So see you at 1.